and welcome to the 16th episode of the More Than Books podcast.
Numbers are hard, people.
Well, you know, we've done enough of these now that number doesn't really matter.
Nope.
Well, this time, well, as always, I'm Joel, and I'm here with my co-host.
It's me, it's Jake. I'm back.
Back from where?
That's the leading question. I am back from going to Worldcon. Or, as I found out, they actually name each of the conventions separately. They don't take over a convention. I don't know. That's what I thought it was. No. They rename Worldcon for every location that they go to. So, for us, it was Mid-Americon because we're in Mid-America.
Mid-Americon 2.
2, because this is the second one.
I guess they had had one before.
Yes, in 1976, which I heard some interesting stuff about that when I was there.
Were there in 1976?
No, but the people I was around, and specifically the person that I assisted with while I was there, was at the 1976 Worldcon. But we'll get more into that later.
Well, how was it?
Worldcon was exhausting. It was very strange. And I did crazy stuff. Not like illegal things, but what I was given the opportunity to do because of how things shook out was pretty nuts.
Okay.
So,
now, I know we talked about Worldcon last year.
Yes.
If you don't remember, we had a podcast about last year's Worldcon, more specifically the Hugo Awards and controversy surrounding the Hugo Awards last year.
Yep.
So was there any carryover from that controversy?
Yes, there was. And the reason being is that in order to make a change to the World Science Fiction Society, which is the governing body that essentially handles Worldcon and the Hugos, you have to bring it up one year in a business meeting, and then you have to ratify it the next year. So there's an entire year's process that you have to wait in order to make a change to the convention or the awards.
Okay. So, are they changing the voting process? Or?
They tried. Before this episode, I tried to find the notes pertaining to the business meetings, and they were, I had gotten, someone had a copy of the day, like Saturday's business meetings when I was there, and they were looking it over, and it was just full of mathematics. And I'm like, what happened? And I'm like, oh, right. They're trying to develop a voting system that will prevent these slate votes from happening. That will essentially they have someone who's a mathematician, big surprise, that is helping them into creating an algorithm that will essentially knock out, from what I understand, I could be wrong, and it goes with everything I say, but the algorithm will prevent this slate vote from counting, and so that will essentially prevent people from doing slate voting in the future.
Okay. So making sure that, you know, everybody isn't having the exact same set of votes for every single title.
Right, exactly.
So everyone's not just turning in this sheet of...
Yes, yeah.
particular 12, 20, 30 titles that they
right.
want to win every category.
Exactly. If it sees this, you know, single thing repeated a certain number of times, it will just boot it out without any sort of discrimination against the person that's doing it, because there are chances that people will vote the same, but if it's in the full scope of voting, if it sees this particular pattern repeat itself up to a certain number of times, then it will get rid of it.
Yeah, so if you don't remember last year, this was a problem because there were some websites that were pushing a specific slate of titles they wanted to win on the basis of politics
predominantly. A lot of it had to do with, and I, you know, this is, it's interesting, I found out way more by doing the reading that for the voting, and I didn't read everything. I'm sure there are people that do. That's really hard because they only give you like 2 months maybe to vote on stuff.
And don't they only give you like pieces of some of the works? Like you might get a chapter or a section of a novel? Well,
actually, some of them were full novels. Like for, I mean, listen, you pay $200 to go to this thing. They better give you some free stuff, is my feeling. But there were a couple of titles that you only got a chapter.
Okay. It's probably up to like the publisher's discretion.
Absolutely. Yeah. 100%. And a lot of publishers want to play ball. A lot of publishers like Tor and Bain, they know that this is their audience for a lot of their books. And so for the attendees, you're paying this money, they're going to give them to you, which is super nice. I'm 100% down with that. The big one this year that certainly did not have the full thing was Jim Butcher's novel, and it's just Ballantine didn't want to play ball. They gave you a consideration selection, and I thought it was just like the few intro chapters, and that was it. And I was like, oh, this is lame. I can't even. His books are usually better at the end, not at the beginning.
Yeah, yeah. I know that. Yeah, I've heard you talk about him before, and you've liked.
I like Jim Butcher's books. They're very fun. They sell well. He makes a lot of money off of his Harry Dresden novels. They're good. They're fun, kind of pulpy-esque reads. Pulpy noir. They've changed over time. They were very noir in the beginning, and now they kind of take a life of their own. He didn't even go. He was not at the ceremony because he knew he was a Slate author, and I don't know if he supports any of the puppy stuff. I don't think he does. I think he just wants to have the opportunity to win a Hugo, and people legitimately want him to win it, regardless of the politics.
Oh, that's fair. I mean, it sounds like I haven't read anything by him, I will say, but from what you've told me, it sounds like he doesn't ever really have like a... He's not pushing really a message. It's more like a fun space opera type stuff.
Well, maybe no, it's urban fantasy. He writes urban fantasy predominantly.
Okay.
His newest book, I think, is more along the lines of steampunk.
Okay.
It's a new genre. And then he wrote an entire series of books on a dare, which I think is really funny. A fan dared him to try to combine like Roman mythology with Pokemon, and he did it and actually sold really, really well. I've read the first book in that series, and it's a super fun book. He does have some beliefs that are more conservative than others. And in his latest book in the Dresden novels, he actually kind of wrote some scenes into it to help explain his political views, which I didn't care for. Thought that was really ham-fisted, and I was really disappointed the fact that he felt he needed to do that. He could have just said it in a blog post. You know, he could have just...
It didn't need to be.
Didn't really need to be in the novel, but maybe some people won't listen unless the fans read the stuff there. Because in a lot of ways, he is Harry Dresden. Like many authors, their main character is personified by themselves, at least partially. And I think that he put Harry in some situations to explain, like, you know, because he got a lot of flack because he has some very stereotypical in Native American / you know, American Indian characters, and the communities, some people don't like it. And this is, I think they have to understand that he's something of a pulp writer, and I know he's writing in today's age. This is just how he writes. If you don't like the character, then just, I don't know, don't read the book. I could say that. It's a crappy thing to say. We're getting off the rails all day, because I can talk about Dresden and he's a good guy. He doesn't mean anything by it. People get upset. It is what it is.
Well, I kind of got you off track earlier. So you were talking about some of the crazy stuff you did at WorldCon. What do you mean by crazy?
So when I went, I wanted to work staff because I had the opportunity to work staff there as a guest liaison. Those are essentially the people that they're there to help the guests and to make sure that they get to their panels on time. That is their whole purpose. So you are part gopher and then part timekeeper. I thought when I went that I was only going to be helping the musical guests, Paul and Storm, which, by the way, Paul and Storm are super funny. They're super nice. I met them while I was there. I missed their concert, and I'll explain why in just a second, but they were really, really cool. And I did get to see a few songs performed live by them, and it was very fun. I really, in retrospect, I kind of wish that I had them just only for the fact that I would have gotten to slough off a little bit. But I wouldn't have gotten all of the opportunities that I got. Because when I got there, talking to the guest liaison coordinator, I guess, which she was great. She really helped out a lot because I had no idea what I was doing. But she's like, hey, so Paul and Storm said they don't really need a guest liaison. What do you think of, do you like cyberpunk? And I'm like, as a matter of fact, yes, I do like cyberpunk as a genre. I enjoy cyberpunk quite a bit. So the person that was going to be helping the guest of honor, who is the Toastmaster, Pat Cadigan, backed out. It's going to be a lot of work, and you guys are going to be going to a lot of panels, but would you want to do it? And in my mind, I'm like, if there's any chance I can get my $200 I paid back, I have got to help Pat Cadigan. This is in the beginning. In the beginning, initially, this is what was running through my head. Also, she's a guest of honor. There's got to be cool stuff. And there was. So I certainly don't regret it. Also, Pat was really cool. So there's that too. But yes,
But they kept you busy, didn't they?
Yes, they did. I actually, before this episode, I wrote down all the stuff I did. And almost all of it is with Pat. And it doesn't necessarily make me sad because there weren't a ton of panels I wanted to go to, but there were some, and there were things that I missed. I'm not super broken up about it. There's one that I'm like, oh, I really wanted to go to that. But in my heart of hearts, I have a feeling someone recorded it. So I'll probably be able to find it. I just wasn't there to see it. Meh. It is what it is. So yes, Wednesday, I got there Tuesday night, 2 weeks ago, and I talked to that person that night, because I got there relatively early, sometime around 6 is when I kind of settled in at the hotel. And I was in the hotel, the Marriott, that was just down like 2 blocks from the convention center. It's a short walk. It's not that bad, but it sucks when it's really hot out. So I really wish that the convention center had the hotel built into it in some fashion, that we could have gotten that suite. But it was the best hotel for the convention center.
I always stay at the Holiday Inn Aladdin down there. That's my
yes,
favorite one.
And I have stayed. If I recall correctly, I have stayed at the Aladdin, and I had a good time at the Aladdin because it's super cool. But apparently, that Holiday Inn is no longer owned by Holiday Inn.
It's weird.
Yeah, they sold it to somebody, and so I don't know. They actually canceled a bunch of people that were going to stay there, and so a bunch of people were super mad. So yeah, FYI, Kansas City downtown, that the Aladdin is no longer owned by Holiday Inn Express.
Well, okay.
The situation at the Marriott was pretty good. I roomed with a bunch of costumers. That's who I stayed with. I have a friend, Bethany. Hello, Bethany. You'll probably be listening to this. Who do amazing costumes, and they were there to compete in the masquerade. I thought the masquerade was going to be a literal dance. No, it is not. It is a costume contest. For all of those that go to other conventions that have a quote-unquote masquerade, they are not dances. They are costume contests. Originally, the masquerade was a costumed ball, as antiquity states. However, that is not the case anymore. If you go to a convention, masquerade's on there. It's the costume contest. It has to do with like the National Costumers Association. Like there's organizations for everything, people. And I found this out, and I saw some amazing stuff. But we are jumping way ahead. because we are not even on Wednesday yet.
Well, let's get back to Wednesday.
Wednesday. So Pat had, I met Pat Wednesday morning, and I talked to her, walked around a little bit. I think she had some initial stuff that she had to meet with someone that day, but the first thing I took her to was and this is my first panel of the convention, Living with Cancer. Not a fun time.
Yeah.
I have a family member that is currently battling cancer and winning, thankfully, which is great. But it's really tough because she wasn't the only person on the panel. There were three other fantasy and science fiction authors who were also battling with cancer. One woman on the panel has 7 different types of cancer. Ooh. And has had cancer for like 30 years. So it was really interesting. In general, the people on the panel got to speak, and then a little near the end, some people kind of wanted to talk about their cancer. And I understand it, you know, it's just one of those things. I'm like, yeah, but isn't everyone here to listen to the panelists? It was just the moderation itself, which Pat, I believe, moderated that particular panel. And then we didn't. After that, I was kind of left to my own devices, and I walked around the con floor. I'm just going to say this now. The people attending this convention are not terribly young, especially on Wednesday. Kind of, that's the hardcore people who are there on Wednesday, because usually it's a Thursday to Monday convention, but this year it was a Wednesday to Sunday.
Okay.
So a lot of people didn't show up on Wednesday, except for those people that were staff. Or volunteers, the move-in, move-out people, or MIMO as their tags stated, because they con badges are a big deal there too, but we're going to get into that in a sec. But in general, a lot of the people that attended WorldCon are older. This is a convention for science fiction and fantasy authors and literature. In general, the people that are fans of that stuff are aging.
Yeah, so it's not like a Comic-Con. It's not going to be no. like that super young pop culture.
Exactly. Yeah, none of that stuff is there. There were like 3 panels that had anime in the name. And this is... Worldcon, in my mind, is a convention for, and I quote, fandom. It is intended to be all-encompassing of all fans of all things that are media. It is not necessarily that, and that's only because just in the past, the only thing you could really be a fan of was science fiction and fantasy, Western science fiction and fantasy, and the majority of the people that still attend the convention are really only into that. Now, were there young people there? Yes. Were there kids there? Yes. So, I mean, it's not necessarily all a bunch of old people, but it is what it is. I did not see a ton of people around my age on Wednesday. Now, as we got further into the week, I felt better. There were more people around my age. I'm like, okay, clearly these are the people that are just attending from Kansas City who are into certain authors that are there that day. Because there were, like, Scott Lynch was there, a Gail Kerrigan. Scott Lynch writes a kind of fantasy slash assassin 18th century stories. We have his book, and Gail Kerrigan writes steampunk. Okay. And there were a good, what was funny is like Thursday was steampunk day and I barely saw any steampunk. Like there was one guy who was competing in the masquerade that was in a steampunk Ghostbuster costume, which by the way was awesome. And that guy was super cool. That was like the only one I saw. It's kind of a bummer.
And then steampunk seems more like a fashion statement than like an actual genre. You know, it's so niche. I know it seems to be getting more popular.
It is more popular. I mean, there are whole conventions just for steampunk. And because there is enough media, mostly books and then costumes. I mean, those are probably the big two. I would say that the probably the largest growing fandom in literature is probably steampunk, and that's why they had a number of panels. Phil Foglio was there. He writes Girl Genius, and Girl Genius is all steampunk. So He's great, by the way. I met him, too. I met a lot of people. That's the thing. You hang around guests of honor, and you meet a ton of cool people. You meet a lot. I met a lot of authors. So, yes. And then Wednesday was the opening ceremony. So that was pretty much Wednesday. Wednesday was pretty low-key. That was it. I bought some gifts for people, and then I bought myself some very rare CD soundtracks because the con floor was full of books. I'm a librarian. I don't need to buy books. I don't know. There's now that I've been in the profession for long enough where I'm like, if I want to read this, I will either find it somewhere or I will get it through interlibrary loan. The need to collect and purchase books is no longer in me. When I was 15, my mind would have been blown. I would have been like, oh my God, all the books, I must buy them all. I would have blown like $500 on books easy. Which, by the way, one vendor had a first edition copy of Game of Thrones in the hardbound. And the original hardbound edition did not have a dust jacket. It had a slipcover. So, you know, like the box. And they had it sealed in a bag, mm-hmm. and they were selling it for the price of $900. This is another reason why I didn't buy any books, because there were a number of vendors selling old rare books.
Rare and collectibles, and they weren't cheap.
They weren't even reasonably priced in many cases, but that's con pricing. And I understand that they have to pay for the table for the weekend. It's very expensive for them. They have to price things to make it worth their while. But then I'm really confused by that always, because I'm like, people don't want to pay that. You have to price things competitively. I guess you just don't want to sell that book. That's what it says. And maybe that's a fair price for that book. I don't know, because I'm not a book collector. So there's that too. I generally only buy books if it's stuff that I know I can't get out of a library, or that would be something I want to read immediately that I can't get out of a library. Lately, that's been pretty rare. Thursday, I went to a cyberpunk thing with Pat. There's a thing called a coffee klatch.
I don't know what that is.
I didn't until I went to Worldcon, and essentially it is a coffee talk. It is where you sit down with someone drinking coffee and you have a conversation. That's it. It's cool. You had to sign up.
Is it like speed dating? They pair you with
kind of, but
people?
With authors. No. Yeah. So you went to a spot where you could sign up. You sign up for the particular author's coffee klatch, and then you sat at a table with them drinking coffee. There weren't a lot of slots. It was tough to get into a lot of them. If you wanted to go to a lot of those, you had to sign up beforehand. So they had coffee klatches, and then they had beer ones, so you could have a beer with your favorite author. Really cool concepts. I had no time for those. Those did not happen for me.
Oh, gotcha.
Now, Pat had a coffee klatch. It was right across the room from the coffee klatch room. Was right across the room from the green room. So she just went to it. I did not help her for there. A lot of times I was just there to kind of keep her company, make sure she was going to get there on time. If any weirdos came by, I'm a big dude, so I could stop them. I didn't see a lot of weirdos, thankfully. There was some stuff that happened there. Going to go into that later. But in general, I was just there to help her open doors and grab things for her, that sort of stuff. Not a big, you know, but she had a lot of stuff. During her coffee klatch, I was able to get into a George R. Martin signing. So my copy number 5 is signed by George R. R. Martin.
Oh, nice.
Goal 1, complete. that was one of the things that I wanted to get, and that's why I paid the money. And then my friend, because after she was done, she's like, I helped her back to the hotel because she was kind of done for the night. And she's like, all right, I'll see you later. You're done for the day. I'll see you tomorrow. And my friend Bethany was doing a anime looking cosplay panel, and I just went to support her. And it was cool. I actually learned a lot about crafting wigs, because that was a big conversation, because anime people have crazy hair. And just in general, it made me realize, like, Bethany really knows her stuff. I am a complete Luddite when it comes to costuming and clothes. So
Yeah, I'm with you there.
Yeah. And then after that, we went back, kind of changed and such because the Retro Hugo Awards were going on. So what they did is kind of a fun thing with people is they had an award ceremony for with all of the same people that were on the ballot for the 1941 Retro Hugos. Which I guess maybe that was the last time that the Hugos were there. Either way, I thought it was 1976, but maybe I'm confusing the locations. In Kansas City, maybe that was in St. Louis that year, and it was called something else. I could be wrong. Either way, the 1941 Hugo Retro Awards. So the winners were stuff, most of which I had never read. The novel was Slan by A.E. Van Vogt. No clue. Best novella was by Heinlein. Big surprise. By the way, Heinlein is a practical god when it comes to Worldcon. He's a great guy. I like his work. There was a lot of Heinlein. And Pat,
I can imagine a lot of Heinlein.
I think he's from Kansas City or lived there or something along those lines. What's interesting is Pat Cadigan was Heinlein's handler.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Yes. So we talked about Heinlein, and she has a very different opinion of Heinlein than a lot of people because she actually hung out with him and knew him to some extent, and they were kind of friends for a while. So again, there was a great education in fantasy and science fiction history, just being around Pat Cadigan because she's been there. She's been in the trenches. You're reading over the list.
There's some interesting stuff on there.
There is some really interesting stuff. Probably my favorite one, and I did a little bit of voting on this. Batman number one, best graphic story. Big surprise. I thought it was cool that was on there. And then long form best dramatic presentation was Fantasia. Walt Disney's Fantasia. Best dramatic presentation short form was Pinocchio. How is that any shorter? I don't know. That's the thing. What's really funny is the best editor in short form was John W. Campbell. The new author award that they give out for the regular Hugos
the Campbell Award
is right? Named after him. Yes, yeah. So I thought that was kind of interesting, and I feel like maybe they did that. One of the best things I thought was hilarious is the best fan writer was Ray Bradbury.
He was the fan writer.
He was a fan writer.
Wow,
that was hilarious. So big surprise that Ray Bradbury would win that because he is great. So it was done in the actual Retro's 40 style, the award ceremony. So they had like period costuming, a period band. They played. There was swing dancing at that award ceremony. I went for about a half hour because my friends were going to go, and then they skipped out and went to parties. So it was neat. While that was the reason. The reason why I was only there for a half hour is because before that I went to a reading with Phil Foglio. I'm a big Girl Genius fan, not huge, but I'm pretty big. I've read all of the comics pretty much up to the point they're active right now, and I wanted to meet him, which I did. But he had a reading and he read new stuff that's not even published yet. So he's got a new book in the works. It might be ready this year or next year, so I got to hear all about that. It sounds pretty interesting. I'm not sure where he's going to take the story. It's about a quasi-eternal entity that is going to, that protects people's in their dreams. And so I immediately thought Sandman. And I'm like, I don't think it's that. I'm really interesting to hear more about it because I missed the first like 5 minutes. So I missed the preamble. This is me running around like a crazy person trying to get to stuff. And then after that on Thursday, we kind of hung out and had snacks and stuff and went to the parties. And the parties were not, there were a number of them that were non-alcoholic. And I mostly went to those because I didn't want to go to the crazy ones. New Zealand actually was trying to become the location for 2020. And so they were giving out non-alcoholic mixed drinks that are like using New Zealand soda and New Zealand kiwi drink.
Oh, nice.
It was amazing. That was super good. And then they had these weird meringue cakes that are New Zealand made cakes, and they were extremely good. I had at least two of them. Soup. They were, and the New Zealand people in general were very nice. Really, really enjoyed talking to them. So, yeah, that was Thursday. Friday was Star Wars Day. So, we're at the halfway point now. I wore my my Sith Lord costume from Halloween at all day.
Oh, nice.
On Star Wars Day.
It's pretty hot, though.
yes, I was sweaty for a lot of the day. So, first panel with Pat was living in a cyberpunk society. So they kind of talked about the fact that we are kind of living in the cyber. We're slowly approaching what we thought of at the time in the 80s, the cyberpunk society, where, you know, we all have computers and there's augmented reality and cyberspace and all this stuff. So it was a really interesting panel. And I enjoyed all the panels I went with to Pat. So they were all great. And that one was cool. We're not going to talk about that. Anyway, Pat Cadigan Explains It All was next. That was her, like, kind of solo panel, where her solo speech for being the Toastmaster for the event. So she talked about really just her life. She just kind of had a, like, this is what I've gone through. It was her chance to talk about whatever she wanted. And it was really interesting to learn about what she has gone through. She's a very down-to-earth person. Most of the authors I felt were relatively down-to-earth. She especially was raised from having no money. You know, for the longest time, she had to work really hard for writing. She's almost died like twice. So she told the story of how she almost died and she didn't realize it at the time. It was nuts. There's just super, super cool to hear kind of about her life. She thanked me during that presentation. She was always really, really appreciative of me just helping her get to locations, because the Kansas City Convention Center is a maze.
Yeah.
Have you been to it before?
I've been by it, yeah.
I know
the building's huge.
Yeah, it's enormous, for one. And two, they're, where they have breakout rooms and stuff are in weird spots. And they have some spaces just, like, tucked away behind things. It's just, it's bizarre. And enormous. So, I can understand why it was nice to know where, you know, have someone there that knew where stuff was. I made it my purpose on Wednesday to, like, I need to learn everything because I need to know where stuff is. After that, we had a very long break. I didn't do anything. Like, I ate. I relaxed.
One of the few times of downtime you had.
Yes. Yeah. And then she had a panel, Generation Starships, that she was on. So that panel was literally about a generation starship. Essentially, the people that start on the journey are never going to make the destination. Their children will make the destination. And so it was really well attended. Creepily well attended. It was very full. And I was like, I did not know that this was going to be a super full panel. It was kind of right after dinner, and so maybe people just didn't have anything, and some people were just interested in it. But there were literally probably 30 or 40 people. I mean, it was 50 or 60 people in the room. It was a big room, and there were a lot of people.
A lot of WALL-E fans?
You know, I thought about that because that's what the WALL-E room, that's what the WALL-E ship is. WALL-E never came up, which I was like, I want to bring up WALL-E. Because pop culture, that's a generation starship. That's the only way we can think about it, is because WALL-E makes it very apparent of the issues and tribulations that exist in a generation starship. Except that's a generation starship that never had a goal. The goal was escape Earth.
Yeah.
Most generation starships, the goal is get to this planet and start the human race again. I guess in some ways it was escape Earth, wait, come back when things are better. And things never true. Well, things did get better, I guess, in that movie. But spoilers for a Disney movie you've probably already seen. Otherwise, there were like 20 or 30 people that they, because at one point in time they asked them like, so who would want to go on a generation starship? And 20 or 30 people raised their hands. So like, now are you doing this to like escape the Earth because it sucks? Or you literally want to do this because you think it's an important thing? And most of the people kept their hands up. Like people, I think, what was that movie that was, was it last year that was crazy? About interstellar. Interstellar. Yeah. It was interstellar space travel. I think to the people seeing that, that in, was a big inspiration to a lot of people. I haven't seen Interstellar, but I know kind of what the story is about and what happens to some extent in it. And I could see that raising awareness of generation starships and inner, you know, you may have to be in a generation starship in order to make interstellar travel possible. The one thing that I regret was because I was at that Generation Starship thing, immediately after that was the Girl Genius radio plays, and it's where Phil and I believe her name is pronounced Kaya, it's his wife, they do a radio play with them playing the characters along with a bunch of people from the audience.
That sounds fun.
Yes. I really wanted to go to that, and I didn't because of reasons. And mostly because Friday night was the masquerade. So I really wanted to support all my costuming friends. I actually helped them with some audio stuff while I was there because I do this podcast. I was able to work in Audacity to kind of help tweak some audio stuff that they wanted for their presentation. Cause it's, you don't just like walk around, do a little catwalk. You actually create kind of a dramatic scene with the costume. So there, part of it is kind of faux play as well. There's some dramatic presentation that goes on. I mean, these people aren't actors, but at least there is a little bit more pomp and circumstance that exists to it than just like, check out my digs. Boom, boom, boom. It's a little cooler than that. So Friday night, I went there. My friends were doing this whole kind of reimagining of the Morrigan and based off of original Celtic mythology. And so they're all three, the Morrigan. It was neat. And I saw a bunch of cool costumes. The best thing in show was a four-generation family. So great-grandma, grandma, parents, children, all in costumes doing what they call toll bridge. And so it was like a bunch of trolls and like goblins and stuff for most of the family members. I mean, one of the grandparents was in a wheelchair and they dressed up the wheelchair to look like she was sitting on a log, a cut stump. And it was pretty amazing. They did a really great job. They deserved winning best in show. So otherwise,
cool. Yeah.
There was one novice that actually had a full walking, pretty much to scale griffin, and it was one person in the costume.
Wow.
Yeah, they actually like created a pulley system to make the legs work behind them as they were walking around. I mean, it looked like kind of quasi fakey, but for what it was pretty amazing. The fact that it was only one person inside there. And then there was a handler that kind of helped them move around. I saw that like both Wednesday and Thursday because they showed off that costume a ton. But then I was
well, if you put all the time into it, you'd have to show it off.
Exactly. Yeah. And then and, like the same thing with the Ghostbuster, the steampunk Ghostbuster. I saw him earlier on Steampunk Day, and then he actually brought that to the masquerade, and he had music and stuff. It was entertaining. So that was my friends who went won best in class dramatic presentation because literally they worked really hard on that. So the actual like little thing they did was cool. And then best in class technical work.
Oh, nice.
Big surprise, because my friend Bethany is the costumer at the University of South Dakota.
Okay.
She's the head costumer. So and there were three different costumes. They were all very different. They had a lot of different mediums. Like, they worked really hard on them. So they were very happy with those two awards. And what you get in masquerades or in costume contests are ribbons. Like a dog show gets ribbons, very similar, and Bethany's going to give me crap about that. But yes, it's a similar concept where they get the ribbon. So she got two ribbons, and she was very happy about that. Later that evening, we all kind of afterwards were all exhausted because they had to wear costumes and stuff, and they were tired. So we hung out in the room. We didn't go anywhere, and we randomly get a knock on the door, and some of the people hanging out there were, like, kind of inviting people to the room to hang out, and in walks people we've never met before. It is an older gentleman and a lady. Don't think of anything. I was told this might happen because one of the people that we were rooming with, because there were like 6 to 8 of us in this room, so it was a double suite with a middle section, and it was all interconnected. So it was a big space. That the gentleman comes in, he's still wearing his con badge, and I read the name, and it's Larry Niven.
I know that name.
You should know that name. He wrote Ringworld.
Okay.
Yeah, you know. Halo is based off of Ringworld. He wrote a ton of old science fiction. So straight up, Larry Niven came to my con room and hung out for a little while. It was a very surreal moment in my life. I'm not a huge Larry Niven fan, but I know who he is. I know he made a huge contributions to science fiction he's still kicking. So yeah, he hung out, kind of talked a little bit. Someone offhandedly kind of joked about Heinlein briefly because we're all like, Heinlein is everywhere. And I was like, maybe you don't want to make a joke around Larry Niven with Heinlein. They're like, what? Who's that? I'm like, yeah, it's Larry Niven. Like, why didn't you tell me? It's my dad's favorite author. So it was a surreal moment. It was very fun. That was interesting. Weird moment at Worldcon.
Yeah, sounds fun.
Saturday, Pat had an autographing I had to get her to, and then she had Hugo rehearsals, because that evening was the Hugo Awards. That is where I actually hung out and met George R. Martin's assistant, Joan, or Joe, as she was commonly referred to. Joe is super cool. She's very nice, and very helpful, and generally, like, a great person. It was fun being around her. I heard that a new project that George R. R. Martin has, and that Melinda, M. Snodgrass are working on, is we are going to be getting this is public knowledge, so I can talk about this. There were a couple things I can't talk about because we're actually putting this out there, and that would be bad.
When's the new Game of Thrones book come out?
That never came up. I can tell you that not once. You know what's funny is
you can tell me after.
I am 100% truthful to you, Joel. I've had people ask me that never came up once, which is really sad because of course I want there to be the new book, but that was never spoken about. In general, you don't talk to George R. R. Martin about that because it will make him mad.
Well, yeah,
because he gets that crap a lot. Yeah. So I never push my luck on that. The big thing that came up is that we are going to be getting a Wild Cards TV show.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so the library actually just was donated one of the Wild Cards books, and I think we might start getting more of them because there's a distinct possibility it could be huge. It's a dark, gritty world of superheroes with strange powers.
Now, I haven't read any of those, but I have heard of them.
Yes. It's one of those things that George R. R. Martin wrote early on, and he wrote and then edited. He mostly is an editor nowadays for Wild Cards, but I think he was originally kind of one of the big brains behind Wild Cards. And it's one of the things that Wild Cards is most known for is that George R. R. Martin works on them. So there is that. So that was super cool to learn about. And then I got an invitation hanging around Joe because Pat was talking me up because she's super nice. An invitation to the Hugo Losers Party that George R. R. Martin hosts after the Hugos. Boom. I still have the ticket. It's super nice. Like they put a lot of work into it. So it was really cool. I will bring that to work and show you sometime, Joe. So after that, I was able, or actually before that, because I wrote this down wrong, I was able to get my Tamara Pierce book signed, which I was worried that I wasn't going to be able to get to. Funnily enough, my friend Bethany was Tamara Pierce's liaison. Oh, so nice. I'm like, if push came to shove, I could give it to her, and Tammy, as she likes to be called, could sign it. No problem. So not a big deal. Yeah. So I got to, she signed it. She personalized it for me. She's very, very nice. It was a little odd because, and I didn't think I would care as much as I did, but I actually cared a whole lot about meeting her. Because her Alana book, the first Alana book, was the very first fantasy book I ever read.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's a pretty big author.
Yes. And her lines for signing, they had to turn people away, and they had to have another like impromptu signing, like show up at this place. We will do. We will continue with signings. Like,
well, that's nice that she did that. Like, gave everybody a chance.
They worked her the whole convention. She was in so many panels, but she was probably their biggest. She's up there for biggest draw. I mean, George R. R. Martin helps.
Yeah,
as always. But he's been going to Worldcon for so long that, frankly, his signings were not, like, crazy. Because the people that go...
Everybody already has it.
He's been going forever. I mean, a really long time. So, let's see here. After that, I went to... Pat was pretty much done until the Hugos, so she kind of did her own thing. So I went to George R. R. Martin's Wild Card Death Match. So he had about 10 of his authors for Wild Cards on stage with him. He picked names out of a bucket, and then they as their characters would describe how they would fight each other to the death. It was only slightly cringeworthy because none of them wanted to kill each other. They were all like, oh, I don't want to hurt you because I like you and we're friends in real life and I'm not an actor. So that was... I get it. It was fine. It was very funny, actually. And they filmed it because they're possibly going to use it as promotional material for the TV show.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So that's a big deal. After that, I had to take Pat to a pre-party for the Hugos, which my name was not on the list, so I didn't get to go. It was kind of a bummer. I hung out inside of the auditorium because I explained, like, I have staff on my con badge. And there's a little ribbon that says it because ribbons and con badges are a big deal there. That is not a thing in any other convention I've ever been to. This is me on con ribbons. Uh-huh. I don't understand them. I get that people are into them. It is a thing. So essentially a con ribbon is your con badge is like an index card laying long ways, and then you attach an adhesive ribbon to the bottom of it. And people will daisy chain those. And some people have them con ribbons that are longer than they are. It's like, it's just a thing that people are into at these conventions. They just collect con ribbons, and then the bigger the con badge is, the cooler they think they are. I don't know.
It's showing that they've been around.
They've been to a ton of stuff this con. Look at all the things I did at this convention. And so maybe for some people, that's how they remember what they went to. If they had a con ribbon or a badge ribbon, they did it. But it was just something I was wholly unprepared for, and it caught me off guard. And people would give me con ribbons. I would put them on, and then I would just remove them because I'm like, this is not something I'm into. It's cool. I'm going to say this in general for this convention. It's cool if you're into it. If it's not for me, it's not for me. And you do your thing. I do my thing. We good. That was like the whole, in general, that's the whole vibe for that convention. Like, if you're not into it, you're not into it, and that's cool. No one gives you crap about it. Everyone's really supportive. It was a neat, in that regard, the convention was good. So Hugo Awards. We are now to the Hugo Awards. This was 5 days of my life. we are just going to go quick down the road, because you can find a lot of the stuff. Best novel was The Fifth Season by N.K. Jemisin. No one was surprised by that. I did not vote for it. Felt a little bad about it, but that's okay. I tried reading it. It wasn't my cup of tea. It just wasn't for me, and that's fine. It's an interesting story. We own it, so if you wanted to read it, we have it. Best novella was Binti by Nnedi Okorafor. She is from Africa. And it was a story that it's actually really good. I believe I voted high for that because you ranked them from 1 to 5, and she was either 1 or 2, so she was up there. Best novelette was Folding Beijing by Hao Jingfeng. Actually, Jingfeng Hao is her real name. They messed it up in the votes, but super cool. It's what I voted for. It was translated by Ken Liu, who translated the Hugo-winning book last award, so he also won a Hugo for that. And when it was really funny, he's like, I don't have much to say, I'm gonna let her do it. And then the actual author came up and she spoke relatively good English, but she was not it's certainly not her native tongue, whereas Ken Liu, I think he's English is his native tongue, or at least that's what it sounds like. I don't know him very well at all. The best short story was Cat Pictures Please by Naomi Kritzer. This was the only story that was not a Slate story, and it's the one I voted for because it was legitimately good. Okay. And it was about an AI that tries to help people and finds out that it really can't help people very well, and all it wants in return is cat pictures. Because the internet is full of cat pictures. She was very, very thankful. She's a super nice lady. I think I met her in passing. Best related work, no award, because they were all Slate. Best graphic story was The Sandman Overture. Big surprise. Not what I voted for. Was a little disappointed. I'm like, I guess. It's The Sandman. Neil Gaiman was not there. Someone accepted the award on his behalf. Bummer. Kind of wish I could have met him. But it's Neil Gaiman. He's a busy man.
Yeah.
The best dramatic presentation long form was The Martian, which was accepted by a astronaut.
Oh, cool.
That actually knows the author for that. I'm blanking on the name. Andy Weir. There we go. So, yeah, they had, because there were a lot of astronauts there. There was actually someone, they were in the jumpers and everything.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So that was super cool. Best dramatic presentation short form was Jessica Jones's AKA Smile, the last episode in the Jessica Jones series. I voted for that. I felt good about it.
It's a good episode.
Yes, it was a good episode. I just had finished it before I left. Best editor short form was Ellen Datlow. What's really funny, Ellen Datlow is one of Pat's best friends. They room together.
Oh, nice.
So, and this is like the 6th Hugo Ellen has won. She wins crazy awards for her editing. Apparently, she's an incredible editor. And she was super nice and super fun.
Sounds like everybody's super nice.
Yeah. Most people there were super nice, which I'll admit that was good. It made all of the hard work feel good. I was helping people I like. Best editor long form, Sheila E. Gilbert. I don't know her. I didn't vote for her because I don't know editors. I actually didn't vote for any editors because I don't know them. Best professional artist was Abigail Larson. That's who I voted for. Her art is good. That's about it. She was in tears. She's very happy. Best semi-pro zine, Uncanny Magazine. It was a bunch of people who are super into it. I don't know. Best fanzine, File 770. Which was actually a controversial award because some File 770 is kind of a mixed bag as far as politics, and so probably some people didn't think it deserved it. But they work hard. The people on the staff that do that work hard. Best fanzine is you don't pay for it; they do it out of the love. Uncanny Magazine is semi-prozine means you pay for it actually, okay. But it's not professionals that do it; it's just fans, but they charge. Best fan cast, which I was super sad because 8-4, a podcast that I listened to, was on the voting, and apparently that was actually a slate. So no award. Best fan writer was Mike Glyer. He was overjoyed to win. Best fan artist was Steve Stiles. I don't remember that award. And the John W. Campbell Award went to, big surprise, Andy Weir.
Okay.
So another astronaut came on stage and accepted the award. So that was it. That was the entire Hugos. Pat was the Toastmaster for the whole thing. I think the Hugo Award was definitely streamed. I think it was saved either through... I'll try to find the link if it's there. I think it's maybe on YouTube now. I could be wrong. I think it was Ustream.
Okay.
Is who streamed it. So you might be able to find it at Ustream as well. They're really close-fisted about kind of content that like that because they cost a lot of money to do this stuff. So
they want people to come.
Yeah. Yes. They want to make it special. Yeah, exactly. So there's that. That was the Hugo Awards. So that was Saturday. So after that, secret party. George R. Martin rented out this old-time, like, Prohibition-era theater that's down the street from the convention center, and his publishers bought out the bars. There were alcoholic milkshakes. There were cat little cakes that were themed in the Song of Fire and Ice, Game of Thrones stuff. So, like, Sansa had a cookie, and then they had the milkshakes were called, like, the White Walker and the Black Wolf, and he had barbecue that you had like little like sample platter barbecue,
Kansas cups. City barbecue.
Yes,
do you know where it came from?
I can't remember. It might have been Gates. I had John's starts with a J. That's what I had. Someone made a run that night. And I couldn't get to it, but they put it in the fridge for me. So we went, we hung out. I did the time warp at this party. I talked to my friends who actually got to go as well, because Bethany and a costuming friend of hers actually dressed up in formal wear and gave away Hugos.
Oh, nice.
Bethany held multiple Hugos. So, because she had very nice dresses and she was staff and they needed more people to help hold Hugos. So she was kind of conscripted into it. Very, very cool.
Well, that is cool.
Yes. So yeah, we did the time warp. I ate a bunch of cakes. I enjoyed all the festivities of the evening. They had a band playing. The band was not bad. You know, talked to Tammy Pierce's niece, who was super cool. As a matter of fact, earlier that week, I was wearing a particular T-shirt that has Pacific Rim on it, and she's super into Benicio del Toro.
Guillermo
del Toro. Yeah. So she's super into his movies, and so we started a conversation because I was hanging around with Bethany waiting for Tammy to get done. And so we started talking and it was neat. She's a super cool lady. So I would get down to the party, head back, I eat my barbecue, I go home. I go to sleep. I wake up Sunday and I don't feel great. So this was when the con crud started for me, and it was not great. And Sunday, frankly, was me sleeping, and then there were two things. The Mid-AmeriCon won a conversation, which Pat had to go to. She was on a panel with George R. Martin, Michael Swanwick, which we have the book that he wrote this last year, Chasing the Phoenix, in our collection, and it was Pat. And they all three talked about the very first Mid-AmeriCon. So Pat talked about her being the liaison for Robert Heinlein. George R. Martin, the very first, at least this is how I took it, the very first Hugo Losers Party was at that convention.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And apparently it was a jug of cheap wine that everyone took swigs out of. And he was in a hotel room. And if you won a Hugo, you had to tell them why you were a loser anyway in order to get in. And so it was really entertaining. I learned that there was an awful lot of skinny dipping that was going on at that Hugo, or that particular Worldcon, rather. And there was some interesting stuff with rooms that had issues. I don't want to necessarily get into that. It was a wilder time.
It was what, 70s?
It was the 70s. Yeah. It was a wilder time. So yeah, it was in that regard, it was super, super exciting, to hear about all these like older stories. Yeah. And there's so much that happened that you got to hear so much about, what it was like to go and meet people. And George is just kind of, they didn't even have a preamble for that. They just kind of went into it. So it was pretty cool.
Nice.
After that, closing ceremony, and then I went home. I went home that night. And then proceeded to be sick for 4 days. And with a bacterial sinus infection.
Good times.
Yeah.
When you throw that many people into a small area for that long.
Well, and it was a
spread.
And sadly, it was a relatively small convention. So we looked up the numbers before this episode. It was 7,000 total came to the convention, and then 4,000 paid. Which means they had a lot of people that were just there, probably vendors and staff and etc. What gets me is that NakaCon, which is the anime convention that's in Kansas City, that's not even at that convention center, crested over 10,000 paid. Mm-hmm. So a big part of why this convention is not necessarily as heavily attended is because it costs $200 to go, and that's a lot of money for a convention.
Yeah.
But for $200, I didn't pay for a single author signature. There was con suite food the entire time. So I pretty much had sodas and water and snack foods to kind of help keep me going. I needed it. Every single event was free. The room parties that they hosted, which were hosted by future convention locations, they were vying for votes because the members vote on where they want the next Worldcon to be. They had alcohol. All that alcohol was paid for by that convention place, so that was all included if you wanted to go do that. And you know, there were a ton of free books. I took none of them because I don't need them, nor did I want them. They were books that probably wouldn't fit very well in our collection, and I just didn't want to haul back a ton of books. And the lines for them were crazy.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, people were taking massive numbers of books and just going nuts, and it was, not what I was there for. But for $200, people probably made back their con badge cost in books alone.
Oh, that's not a bad deal then.
Yeah. I mean, and then for vendors, if you were into handmade jewelry or figurines or expensive artwork by really great artists, because Kuniko, I think it's Kuniko E-Craft, she does a lot of high detail fantasy artwork. She's a Japanese artist, but she mostly does kind of a mostly kind of a Western style, but she The one thing that people probably know her best and don't know that they know her is that she does a lot of artwork for the Celestial Seasoning Tea Company.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Okay.
One of the masquerade costumes was four Asian historical figures from that her tea artwork. They were really cool. Except that they weren't Asian people doing the dressing up, so it was a little awkward in that regard, and so like some people could take it as kind of Asian face, if you will. But it was what it was. In general, Worldcon was a really interesting experience, just from the fact that I got to be around a lot of cool people. I did meet George R. R. Martin. I did physically say something to him. That was a goal, a big goal for the evening. It was at the party, and I just told him, "Great party, George," and that was it. So it wasn't anything truly meaningful, but he's a busy man. He has a lot of people around him. I don't want to bother him.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of authors, when they go to stuff like this, and it's late into the week, really appreciate that.
It's like, just leave me alone. I want to, you know... Have fun.
I have a lot of stuff going on. Yeah. I just want to have fun with my friends. And that's the thing, is if you want to meet fantasy and science fiction authors, go to a Worldcon. If you're into that, go to a Worldcon. If you're not into that, don't go. You will not have fun. That's all there is. So, I mean, frankly, that's what it's for. That's what that convention is for. Now, you know, right after I got done with it, I was super excited. I'm like, I'm going to try to go in 2 years again. And then the kind of con high starts to lose. And I look at what I went through and I was sick and I felt like crap. And now I'm like, in my mind, if I was 15, when I was reading a lot of science fiction and fantasy, that it would have been the convention for me. Like, I was riding high on that stuff. Like, I would have gone bonkers, cuckoo, crazy. Nowadays, I'm older. I'm into some different stuff. You know, I would rather go to, like, a retro video game convention or an anime convention. Like, I kind of want to go back to NakaCon because I really enjoy that convention. Because I went in, like, 2015. It's different. Like, do I regret going? No. Was it a lot of work? Way more than I thought it was going to be. Was it cool that I went? Yes.
Well, it sounds like you had some cool experiences. So you're probably not going to Helsinki next year.
I am not. One, it's super expensive. And two, I feel like I've kind of gotten that experience now.
Yeah.
You know, I felt like it was a once in a lifetime experience. It was probably one of the craziest, probably one of the greatest weeks of my life, just from meeting authors that I truly cared about. And like, just got to be around a bunch of very inclusive, supportive people. So,
well,
yeah. Do I think that they need to make changes if they want to survive? Absolutely. Because I hate to say this, but the con attendees are aging out. They're getting too old to go, or they are not able to go because they are passed on. That is a problem. And that's something that I think Worldcon's going to have to deal with. And I don't know what they're going to do.
Well, I mean, you can see they're trying to open it up and bring in more, you know, graphic novel stuff, more...
They're going to start doing... I think they're probably going to have a YA thing, and they're going to probably have more YA authors. Because if you look at really, really excited, famous authors, YA is where it's at. So... That's it. That is my retro, or not retro, that is my Hugo / Worldcon experience. So I just took you there.
Well, thank you.
Thank me, because it was a lot of money and it was a lot of work. But I don't think I would give it up, because Pat's super cool, and it was really great to meet her.
Well, thanks for listening.
Yes.
Until next time.
Yep. Same bat time, same bat channel. Like us on Facebook. Are we on Facebook? Like, no. No, we're not on Facebook. Like us on iTunes. Listen to us there. Download our podcast. Share with your friends.
iTunes and Google Play.
Before we close out this episode, I just want to state that, because I didn't really mention it at all, but Pat Cadigan is really amazing, and you should totally read her books. She was very thankful. She was hilarious while at the convention, and generally just a great person. So I just want to thank Pat for allowing me kind of into her world for the 5 days. And I have a lot of respect for her as not only a person, but also as an author. So thank you, Pat. If you hear this, fantastic. If you don't, that's cool too. Anyway, thanks everybody for listening, and we hope that you check out our next episode. Later.